And William Verity was another man that you remembered. This interview, I've got hairs up on my arms just thinking about it, and we haven't even got to it yet. He was a journalist.
Yes. Now, I interviewed him, I think, in my first year here, and he'd written about what happened to him and his family after his child was killed in an accident. Those, you don't see them now, and this is because of the campaign that his wife ran. Portable goals in soccer, they weren't very stable, and basically this fell down, and his child, I think was 3 at the time, was killed. He wrote this astonishing book about this happening and what it had done to him and his family and the kind of journey he'd been on. I mean, I know it's a cliche, but it was.
Well, it was, wasn't it? And the year after,
yes.
That kind of forensic look at that one year.
Mm. And then he came here and it was a very long interview, I remember. And at the end of it, I was exhausted and I felt what a remarkable thing he'd done to come on national radio and talk about this. And it's fair to say that we had a massive, massive response to that.
Let's hear why. Let's revisit that interview. William Verity talking about the loss of his daughter, India, back in 2003. And this was from 2007 with Richard.
You call this one of India's gifts. In fact, that's one of the emerging themes of the book, that India gave you gifts.
Mm.
And her passing, in effect, has given you gifts.
Mm. Yeah, and that's one of the complexities of grief and of loss, when you think it's not just loss, it's also gain. And it's because of India living and dying, as Pramana said in the funeral, there are things in my life now which could never have been in my life before. And friendship is one of them. Male friendship in particular is one of them. And one of the things that happens when a child dies is that you become very powerful, because it's such an emotive subject that to some extent people treat you with reverence, but they also, it's very hard for them to say no to you.
You have clout, don't you?
You have clout.
You have moral authority.
And that's come through in all the publicity, the goalpost publicity and the publicity about the book, is that I know that no one's going to ask me a curly question. I don't know what the curly question would be, but you immediately have a reservoir of sympathy that people will say yes to you if they can. And that's another gift. You have, obviously you have to use it wisely and with respect, but it's life-changing.
Here's a curly question. Earlier you said that there was something magical.
Mm.
I want to come back to that. What did you mean? What was the magic that came out of that very hard first year?
Oh, well, it's a curly question because there's a lot of it. I think when a child dies, you're stripped away. All those barnacles of daily life are stripped away and you become very sensitized to all sorts of things. And it's a strange thing to say, but particularly in that year after India died, but still nearly 4 years on, I feel the same. I've never felt so alive. And one of the things that I have felt alive to is God. And it's one of the things that I suppose I've struggled with and wrestled with all my life. And it cannot but confront you with the big questions of life, which, as I've, over the years, I've come to boil down to, and I think perhaps this is what Life Matters is all about when you boil it down to, is it's about life, death, love, and family. And that's it. And what I realized on that very first day when I sat with Joe in the park.
Having your gay times.
Having the golden gay times, which was one of the many rituals that we all fell back on. Waiting for the family to come out of the hospital where India was and pick us up. We had 5 or 10 minutes together, leaning against a gum tree, eating a golden gay time. And Joe asked me, "Where's India gone?" And so I said, "Well, she's gone to heaven." "And where's heaven?" And I said, it was a good answer. I said, "You know, when when you go away on a holiday, and it can be the best holiday, you've had the best time, and then you're coming back home, and even though you've had a great holiday and you're kind of sad that it's over, you're coming back home and you're pleased to be home, that feeling of home. And he said, yeah. And I said, well, heaven is like home plus plus.
That was a good answer.
It was a good answer because,
especially given the state you were in.
Yeah. Well, perhaps because of the state I was in, it wasn't a rehearsed answer. It wasn't something I'd worked out previously. It was something that just, you know, the best teachers are also learning. Mm. And as I was teaching Joe that, I was learning it myself. And then, as I wrote that in the book, a line from R.S. Thomas, the Welsh poet, came to me, where he writes about these Welsh farmers, rough Welsh farmers who have a daughter, beautiful daughter, and he says that the beautiful daughter teaches them the shrill sentence, God is love. And then I turned that round, because that to me still feels a little too Catholic, a little too institutional. If God is love, then love is God. And that I can sit with.
We have to wrap this up. I have to ask you about Liam, because he's your second son, your third child, born in the hospital that India died in.
Mm.
How did that experience, well, it's always a very magnified experience, birth, but it must have had an extra resonance.
It did. We passed both Caroline and it was meant to be a caesarean. It was meant to be a planned, we're going to do it somewhere else. It's all going to be planned. It's all going to be controlled. We're in charge of this.
If only it was always like that.
And what we found, the fantastic thing really is that just as we cannot plan death, we cannot plan life either. It's bigger than us. And so Liam came a few days before the caesarean, 3 weeks early, in the same hospital. It forced us, and I think Caroline in particular, as the mother, it forced her not to run away. It forced her to go through it, but to go through it in a very different context and in a different, very different way. And I now, there are times, and I know this is a bit out there too, but there are times now Liam is 2.5, reaching the age where India died, and there are times when I look into Liam's eyes and India's looking back at me, and that is fantastic. I love it.
I want to finish this last one about you, really, because Caroline campaigned and has pulled off this remarkable thing, making sure this sort of accident won't happen again in Australia. And you wrote this book, and it's beautifully written. It's beautifully realised. You found these words to describe deep and complex feelings. What has the experience of writing the book done to you?
It's helped me achieve a new meaning in my life, where after India died, the meaning went out of my life. And I think of that REM song, Losing My Religion. There I am in the corner. I'm trying to hold a point of view, but it's getting hard to do. I lost everything. I lost my political views. I didn't care anymore. I used to be passionately political. I lost my what religious views I had. They went too. And what the book did was that it allowed me to retrace those steps and rebuild the edifice of my life in a new way that contains the fact that India died. It doesn't run away from it, but it contains it in a stronger and more beautiful and more complex and inevitably also a sadder way. There is a part of me that is sad and will continue to be sad. I'm not painting a Disney picture here. But sadness and loss is a part of life, and that's all it is. It's only a part of life, and it's a part of everybody's life.
William Verity in 2007 in conversation with you, Richard. And his book had a beautiful name. I think it's a Wiggles song.
Mm.
Bear is Now Asleep.
Yes. Yeah. And that's, I think, you just hearing that bit of it, it's such a humbling thing asking those questions of that man who's been through what he'd been through.